Welcome to the Good Reading Podcast, proudly sponsored by Book People Gift Cards. A Book People gift card is the perfect gift for readers of all ages. Simply order your gift card online at bookpeoplegiftcards.org.au. Redeem at any one of over 500 bookshops across Australia. Visit bookpeoplegiftcards.org.au.
Miraculously, Sully's alarm has stopped when I get home, and I'm in a much better mood after my encounter with Fabio. So I climb back into bed with Megan Quinn's new book, delighted that the hero and heroine are just about to get down and dirty. As I read, I can't help but replace Megan's characters with me and Fabio. One hand holding the book above my head, I slide down onto my pillow and creep my hand down onto my knickers. As the heroine's pleasure builds within her, so does mine. "Oh, God," I cry, visualizing Fabio glancing up my body, hunger in his eyes as he devours me. We're both so close. "Yes, more. I need more," I shriek, reading the dialogue aloud and imagining it's Fabio Megan's describing as the hero in the novel, licks his lips and kneels buck naked on the bed in front of his partner. As he thrusts into her, I toss aside the book and reach into my bedside drawer for the vibrator Fred gave me for my birthday last year. I'm building up to a beautiful crescendo when a loud noise begins in Sully's back garden. Thump, thump, thump. My whole body freezes. What the flip is he doing now? Telling myself I don't care, I close my eyes, hoping to get back to business, but the moment is ruined. Throwing back my sheet, I climb out of bed, straighten my clothes, then march outside and over to the fence. On the other side, I see Sully dribbling a basketball up and down his back path, occasionally pausing to shoot it into a hoop. "Training for the Olympics?" I shout angrily. He looks over to the fence and scowls. "Just trying to drown out the noises coming from your place." Surely he didn't hear what I was getting up to with fake Fabio in my bedroom. He smirks. "Sounded like you're quite enjoying yourself." A blaze of heat races up my neck to my face. The cheek of him. I want to jump over the fence and murder him with my bare hands, but instead I yell, "I was," as I storm back into the house. I hear his evil chuckle just before I slam the door. It's the first time he's shown any signs of possessing a sense of humour. And of course, he's laughing at me.
Rachel Johns was once upon a time an English teacher before her dreams of becoming a novelist came true. Rachel is now a writer of romance and women's fiction. Her book, The Patterson Girls, won an Australian Book Industry Award in 2016, and she has twice won the Romance Writers of Australia Ruby Award. Today, I'm talking to Rachel Johns about her latest romance, The Other Bridget. Rachel Johns, welcome to the Good Reading Podcast.
Thank you so much for having me, Greg.
Impressions of the libraries of the past might have given them a bad rap. Bookworms, grumpy, bespectacled readers and librarians, absolute silence among dusty shelves. But the Fremantle Library of your Bridget Jones is a different place altogether.
That's true. Well, I have met a number of librarians over my time, well, from when I was a little kid, and that I vaguely remember the libraries being exactly what you said. You know, you'd go into the school library and everyone had to be completely quiet. No one was allowed to make a squeak. But as I got older, and then when I went to the library when my kids were going to rhyme time and story time, and it was totally changed. And you're allowed to be loud in libraries now, apparently. You're allowed to have discussions and talks and the songs and different things. And libraries, they're not just about books. They're about community. So the silent reading times where it's researching and just immersing yourself in books, I think, are gone. And in this day and age, libraries are about so much more than just that. I actually had the pleasure of going to the Librarian Conference on the Gold Coast quite a few years ago. It was pre-pandemic. And I was a speaker there, and there was an awards night at the end. And after the awards were all done, the lights were dimmed a little bit, you know, the music went up and they had this dancing session. And there were some librarians actually dancing on the table. I'm not joking. All the librarians I've met doing events and stuff, they have all mostly been really quirky, loud, wild, you know, complete opposite of the stereotype of a librarian.
And your Bridget Jones is something along those lines, but she's got a special superpower, an amazing superpower. She's able to match a person to a book.
She was actually a character that I tried to write a few years ago in a rural romance story, and I had that idea of the superpower. I think many librarians and bookshop owners or bookshop workers have something which is a little bit like a superpower in that, you know, they can't just look at someone like my Bridget does and be able to say, you know, but when you work in books, when you read a lot of books, probably similar yourself, you know, if someone tells you the type of thing that they enjoy, you probably can call off the top of your head a few books that would connect them. But what I really love about Bridget, I think, is that so many people I have met over the years, so many people I know, they really fell away from reading in high school often. People are forced to read or asked to read books in high school that are often not accessible to most adults, never mind teenagers, especially now, I think, with all the different distractions that are available. And so I've met so many people that say, well, they have this belief that reading is two things, hard and boring. And often these people just need one book. Then they discover that actually it's not what they imagined, that they can immerse themselves in these worlds. 50 Shades of Grey did that for a lot of readers, no matter what you say about it. Harry Potter got, you know, a lot of kids reading. Like, so often, you know, it's those kind of books that remind people and provide an entrance back into the book world.
Despite her amazing superpower, Bridget doesn't seem to be able to find a love match for herself, despite devoting quite a lot of time to dating apps. But fortunately, she loves coffee, and eventually Fabio, her barista, asks her out. He's a man she swoons over, but surely there's more to romance than an excellent cup of coffee, lustrous hair, and an Italian accent.
I think there definitely is more to romance than that. You know, it's all very well for someone to look nice and be charming, but no, I think in a romance novel, and this is what Bridget is looking for, a lot of people say that romance novels give women unrealistic expectations of men. I don't believe that's the case. I think that's sad because romance novels sort of strive to show relationships where there's respect between the partners, there's chemistry at all levels, physical and intellectual. That's what makes a good partner and that's what makes a good romantic lead. Someone who recognizes or sees the other person in a way that nobody has seen them before and sort of helps them discover who they are.
Fabio chooses to add fuel to the affair by joining Bridget's book club, The Book Stars, in an effort to get closer to her. But how does he go in the book club? Do baristas even read books?
Well, I'm sure there's plenty of baristas who read books. I don't know if saying whether Fabio reads books is giving spoilers away or not, but he definitely is inventive in his ways to get to Bridget. And I think she is a little kind of shocked and unsure about that at first because he's this person who does seem so charismatic and so good looking. And she does have, I guess, a few confidence issues, a few self-worth issues and things. So she can't believe that someone as attractive and personable as him, who seems like a really nice guy because he's so lovely to the elderly people in the book club and takes a little time to warm up to his advances.
In keeping with the idea that happenstance is one of the wonders of romance, Bridget also encounters a troublesome and grumpy neighbour named Sally. Conflict seems to be the order of the day, but how does conflict make the transition to romance?
Conflict is definitely, hopefully, the order of the day because I think conflict fuels all good fiction. I think in romance novels, people are always like, oh, it's predictable. There's a formula and stuff. So the way you play with that is to have reasons why the people who are clearly attracted to each other, maybe not straight away, you know, have opposition and obstacles in their path. So, but the conflict, I guess, in this case, this conflict starts sort of a comedy of errors, or I'm not sure the word I'm looking for, or misunderstandings or sort of judgment. You know, it's a bit like the famous Pride and Prejudice in which Elizabeth and Darcy get off on the wrong foot because they have formed opinions of each other on appearances and what other people have said and not they've heard, rather than sort of getting to know the actual person.
But of course, you've got a wonderful supporting cast for Bridget, or B, as she's known to her friends, including Fred, Xavier, Persephone, Janine, all of whom are at various stages of their lives and who offer varying degrees of wisdom in their support and advice for Bridget's quest.
Yeah, well, one of the things I love exploring, like I always say when people ask what kind of books do you write, because I write a few different types of books. I write small town rural romance. I write general sort of women's fiction. And then this, I think, falls a little bit in between. It's definitely got the stronger romantic elements, but it has, as you said, sort of a cast of other characters. And there's, I kind of say this is half a romance and half a love letter, books and librarians. So what I love about writing is relationships. So it's not just the romance relationships that I want to explore. It's the other relationships that happen in my characters' lives and work relationships. I do find an interesting one because we don't necessarily have a lot in common on the surface. You know, we might be different ages for the people we work with. We might have different religions, cultures, backgrounds, beliefs, but Those friendships often start through a shared, place, but become really important to you because you are working together so much. So I love exploring those kind of relationships. And I also love exploring multi-generational kind of friendships. So Bridget is in her mid to late 20s. So is Fred, I think. We have Rory, who I think has just turns 40 in the book, and Persephone, who is in her mid 40s. And then we've got Janine, who's nearing retirement. And then, of course, we've got all the book stars who are in their 70s and 80s. And they also provide, friendship and wisdom and advice for Bridget.
Among all the hilarity and the relationships and the great fun that this book offers and great reading, there are more serious themes too. And one of those is eating disorders and body image. And that's something you have also struggled with. What brought about a change in you and for you to be able to write about it?
I did never get as bad as Bridget does. So Bridget is hospitalized. I basically in year 11 and 12 at school, I ate like an apple a day, and friends and people were starting to get quite concerned. And then I had, people like counselors and stuff saying I have to come and talk to them at school and things like that. But I still didn't really listen to that. It's bizarre. What happened to me is, I don't think this happens to most people, in that I went to work in England and I worked at a children's camp. And weirdly, for someone with an eating disorder, I worked in the kitchen and I still was not eating anything. But I would take one chip, we'd fry the chips, and then we'd take them from the fryer to the server. And there'd always be like one left. So I would like eat one chip, thinking that I'm not really eating. And then we'd also make cakes, and bits would crumble off, and I'd just eat a couple of. So I kind of tricked myself into sort of starting to eat again. I still didn't recover, I would say, till a few years later when I was pregnant with my first child. I was still very focused on not putting on weight and things like this. There was actually a book I read called Even If It Kills You, and I do mention it in the book. Sadly, when I read that book, it didn't do what it does for Bridget. So Bridget reads the book in hospital, and it's sort of a thing that makes her realize how serious what she's doing is. Whereas it gave me ideas on how to be sneaky about not eating so that my parents wouldn't see. And that linked into me, although it was a bad kind of power of a book, I also knew that there was probably people where it might do what it was meant to do. And it made me realize, I think, the power of books and how they can change your life, make you think differently, in good and bad ways. I tried to write about someone who had anorexia when I was unpublished, and the response I got from the publisher was, "This is too dark to have a main character that's like in this," because it was a romance as well. And so I think that kind of just stayed in my head that I can't do it. I did actually write about eating disorder in a book called Outback Sisters, but it was like a secondary character who was having it. And then when I was thinking about why Bridget might like reading so much, I thought, well, maybe she was in hospital and Brooks provided some reprieve. And I thought, well, what could she have been in hospital for? And then I thought about my own eating disorder, and I thought maybe this is the way that I can write a little bit about eating disorder. But what I really wanted to say is that you can shift your thinking. A lot of people do die from eating disorders. A lot of people get way more serious than I was. But now, I still have thoughts, but I think most people do. But now I'm accepting of stuff. So I wanted to show kind of someone who'd had this experience but had moved on and was living a kind of normal life.
Well, from that rather dark and serious theme to a much sillier one, your biography tells me that the only TV show you watch is Farmer Wants a Wife.
Pretty much.
But how do you feel about Married at First Sight?
I have only watched one episode ever of Married First Sight simply because I was in a hotel room with another author friend. We were on book tour and she was addicted to it. And she was like, "This is the second last episode. We've got to watch it." So I watched it. It's very different from what I can see to Farmer Wants a Wife. I think Farmer Wants a Wife, no matter people complain about it being not what it was when it started, it's still very, very wholesome. So I feel, obviously, it's TV. Everyone's in it for the money. I mean, the producers and the TV shows and all that sort of stuff. But I feel like Farmer Wants a Wife is more genuine and more likely to actually end in results, whereas Maths is very much about getting ratings.
Yeah, I find it a rather cruel, maybe even sadistic idea. The way I see it is to gather a bunch of juiced up morons in a room and then sit back and wait for the inevitable apocalypse.
Drama. Yeah.
I gather that kind of conflict is not your idea of romance.
No, definitely not. I think, I like my stories and my romance and stuff I read and write too. I think one of the things is that, people think all romance is light and fluffy, and it can be, and there's a lot of humor, and I like writing about fun things, and but I also love stories by people who write, and hopefully I did this too, with a bit of a deeper level to those stories as well. And hopefully in my genre, they're also quite, realistic in that people can hopefully aspire to the kind of relationships you see on the page.
The whole genre of romance writing is often dismissed as lacking substance, but its popularity endures. How has it changed over the years, and what do you think has contributed to its longevity?
Oh, a really good question. I think it is always about people. Like, romance explores love, which has, been something from the beginning of time. People have wanted a connection with other people, friendship and intimacy. And so, those are universal things that no matter, whether it's Middle Ages or 2024, we understand people want hope. People want to believe that the world is a better place and that people are good. And romance gives that hope. I know often in times of war or bad financial, depression and things like that, but buy a romance novel, buy a bit of lipstick, because that sort of gives them escape from the horrors of everyday life and the joy that they need. And so it's a feel-good thing. In terms of how books and romance have changed, I think the romance genre is often at the forefront of change. In the last few years, we've seen a lot of emphasis in traditional publishing, or all publishing, on getting diverse voices. And that was happening, like 10 years ago in romance. The romance publishers and the romance readers were pushing for that. Romance sort of changes with the times. So the heroes that people are often, or the characters that people are often frowning upon or mocking, they're no longer in most romance books, unless you're specifically looking for, a dark alpha hero who's part of the mob, or whatever. Or there's certain, you can still get certain things, but the majority of romance books now are very reflective of modern day. They're quite feminist texts in which the women are, career women. They're trying to have it all. They're, equal relationships. You don't necessarily have to end in marriage as a happy ever after anymore. We have happy for now, but we also have LGBTQI kind of relationships and texts and all that. So I think, yeah, romance is often, it moves with the time, so it changes in exactly the same way the world does.
Well, Rachel, it's been great to talk to you, and thanks so much for joining me on the Good Reading Podcast.
Thank you, Greg. I had fun.
I've been talking to Rachel Johns about her new book, The Other Bridget. It's published by Penguin Books, and you can find it at goodreadingmagazine.com.au. My name's Greg Dobbs, and thanks for listening. This Good Reading Podcast was brought to you by Book People Gift Cards. Share the joy of reading with a Book People gift card. To find out more, visit bookpeoplegiftcards.org.au.